The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today at Armchair Traveler, we begin with an article headlined, "Last Year Was a Huge Year in Space. Here's What to Look For in 2023. So we're going to do some out-of-this-world traveling today. This article, originally written for the Washington Post by Christian Davenport, and it later appeared in the January 9, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. For all the fanfare that accompanied NASA's triumphant Artemis moon mission late last year, the space agency still had one fact it couldn't get around. The spacecraft had no people on board, save for a mannequin and a couple of dummy torsos. The Orion spacecraft flew empty as a test to see how the autonomous capsule would do on its journey to the moon and back. But now NASA is looking to get astronauts involved. Later this year, in what promises to be another busy one for the space agency and the industry as a whole, NASA plans to announce the four-member crew of the next Artemis mission, finally giving the program a human face. Those astronauts, three from NASA, one from the Canadian Space Agency, are to orbit the moon in the Artemis II mission scheduled for 2024. That would be a prelude to the human landing a year or two later that would be the first since the last of the Apollo missions in 1972. The astronaut announcement is one of a series of events planned for the coming year at NASA seeks to keep momentum going for the Artemis program. 2022 was one of the most accomplished years in NASA's history, says NASA Administrator Bill Nelson, with images from the James Webb Space Telescope returning to Earth, the completion of the first Artemis mission, and SpaceX launching a record 61 times. But is still much to look forward to in 2023, he said. First up is this business of robots and on the moon. In addition to Artemis II, NASA is working with a number of private companies to send what it hopes will eventually be a fleet of robotic landers to the moon. The first two flights to be flown by a pair of commercial companies, Intuitive Machines and Astrobotic, are scheduled for this year under contract from NASA. No commercial entity has ever landed a spacecraft on the moon. Intuitive Machines said the company hopes to launch sometime between March and May and that it would take 4 to 7 days for its lander to reach the moon's surface. Astrobotic has said that its Peregrine spacecraft is scheduled to launch during the first quarter. Now, the second item here is another lunar lander contract. Later this year, NASA intends to award another lunar lander contract to ferry its astronauts to and from the surface of the moon. SpaceX won the contract for the initial landing and won for one after that. But now NASA wants another provider, and the competition for that contract has grown intense. Blue Origin, the space venture founded by Jeff Bezos, lost to SpaceX in the original round, as did Dynetics, a subsidiary of Leidos. Both are bidding for the contract again, though this time Northrop Grumman, which had been part of Blue Origin's team the last time, has switched allegiance and is now partnering with Dynetics. Blue Origin has picked up two other partners for its team, Boeing and Astrobotic. Those companies join a team led by Blue Origin that also includes Lockheed Martin and Draper. And by the way, it's in parenthesis here that Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, from which we take this article originally. Then the third item that's coming up for the year is picking which astronauts will orbit the moon. One of the most high-profile moments will come, though, when NASA announces the members of the first crew to return to the moon since the Apollo program. In the interview, Nelson, the NASA administrator, said he hopes that will resonate with the American public as much as when NASA announced the Mercury 7, its first crew of astronauts, which included icons such as John Glenn and Alan Shepard, who became celebrities overnight. "Remember back what it was like when the original seven were introduced and they became household names," Nelson said. "Their personal lives were brought out, as were their families, and I think America is ready for that again." The fourth item in the coming year on the to-do list, if you will, for NASA, Boeing finally conducts its first crewed mission. Boeing has a big test looming in 2023. Last year, it finally flew its Starliner spacecraft in a demonstration mission that, without any astronauts on board, to the International Space Station. Now it's looking finally to put astronauts aboard, giving NASA another spacecraft capable of taking crews to and from the station. The company is well behind SpaceX, which also holds a contract from NASA and first flew astronauts to the station in 2020. Boeing's delay has been caused by work to resolve problems with the spacecraft's thrusters during the uncrewed flight, as well as traffic to the space station, NASA has said. Once Starliner does fly with people, it would give NASA three vehicles capable of flying astronauts, along with the Orion capsule and SpaceX's Dragon spacecraft. SpaceX will continue to fly astronauts and cargo to the space station for NASA and its Falcon 9 rocket and Dragon spacecraft. And the fifth item on our do list for NASA is new rockets galore. This year could also see new rockets launching. The United Launch Alliance, the joint venture of Lockheed Martin and Boeing, is set finally to fly its Vulcan rocket for the first time using the BE-4 engines provided by Blue Origin. The rocket would be used to launch national security satellites for the Pentagon, as well as satellites for Amazon's Kuiper Internet system. Relativity Space, a startup company based in California, which uses 3D printers to manufacture its rockets, is scheduled to fly its Terran rocket earlier this year. Now, the Rocket Lab is looking to fly its Electron rocket from NASA's facility in Wallops Island, Virginia, early this year, as well, after its launch in December was postponed. Now, the most anticipated launch of a new rocket this year, though, is SpaceX's Starship. At nearly 400 feet tall, with 33 engines on its first stage, it would be the most powerful rocket ever to fly. SpaceX has developed the rocket to be fully reusable, with the booster flying back to its launch pad to be caught by a pair of mechanical arms. SpaceX intends to make the first orbital launch attempt from its site in South Texas and has preliminary approval from the Federal Aviation Administration. And the final item, number six on our to-do list, more civilians in space. SpaceX intends to send another crew of civilians to orbit later this year as part of the Polaris program being funded by Jared Isaacman, an entrepreneur and adventurer. As part of their mission, the second of three, the crew intends to conduct a spacewalk, a first by non-professional astronauts. Blue Origin also intends to continue flying tourists to the edge of space with its suborbital rocket, New Shepard. Last year, the rocket suffered an engine failure without any crew on board, causing the capsule to abort from the booster. The company has been investigating what went wrong as it works with the FAA before it continues flying private citizens who have bought tickets for space tourism rides. Virgin Galactic, the space tourism company founded by Richard Branson, has not flown to space since 2021, and it is not clear when it might do so again as it works to refurbish its vehicles. Well, Richard Trebo of the Orlando Sentinel is the author of our next article. Ryan back at Space Center so NASA can dissect Artemis mission. So we're going to already catch up with one of those missions we've been talking about. Now, this article updates the earlier one we read when the Orion space capsule returned to Earth in December. The article appeared in the January 10, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. The Orion space capsule from Artemis has come full circle, having launched from Kennedy Space Center, traveled 1.4 million miles in space and around the moon, splashed back down to Earth in the Pacific Ocean, and now journeyed 2,500 miles over land for its return to Florida. After Orion was recovered at sea on December 11th, it made its way to Naval Base San Diego before heading by truck to arrive at the Kennedy Space Center on December 30th. It now sits at NASA's multi-payload processing facility, still sealed tight from its celestial journey. The passengers have been waiting patiently to get out of the capsule. Since they're just mannequins, though, they can wait a little longer. The most human-looking of the three, named Commander Munikin Campos, in deference to the late Arturo Campos, who helped NASA bring the Apollo 13 safely back to Earth, was joined by two partial-body mannequins named Zohar and Helga. Their presence will help NASA determine just what sort of radiation levels and other flight stresses humans will face during the first crewed flight of Orion on Artemis II. Teams will also analyze Orion's heat shield that endured nearly 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit on re-entry, traveling at 24,500 miles per hour, the fastest any human-rated spacecraft has ever returned to Earth. During an end-of-year senior leadership event, NASA Administrator Bill Nelson said he's most looking forward to accelerating Artemis II into next year, but it's going to take a while to get those avionics out of Artemis I, get them retested and recertified, and in 2024, we will do what we've been looking for a long time. In other words, it's going to be at least a year away before all this takes place. Now, Artemis II plans to send four crew members on an orbital mission to the moon, expected to be lasting about 8 days. The mission is still officially on NASA's docket to fly as early as May 2024, although leadership signaled that it expected more of a two-year turnaround from when Artemis I finished its mission, which would mean a launch closer to the end of next year. NASA officials have said the names of the four astronauts likely to come this spring. Already announced is that one of the four will be from Canada. Now, already parked at Kennedy Space Center's operation and checkout facility is the Ride. This is the crew capsule for Artemis II, as well as the European Service Module that provides the majority of Orion's power. They await all the sundry parts of the Space Launch System rocket to arrive this year for an eventual stacking in the Vehicle Assembly Building. Boeing, the core stage main contractor, is putting the final touches for the Artemis II core stage at NASA's Michoud Assembly Facility in New Orleans. "We are prepping core stage 2 for the integration of the engine section," the company said in an emailed statement. "From there, we will attach the four RS-25 engines and perform final testing before our targeted delivery of the integrated core stage to NASA's Kennedy Space Center by mid-year." The segments for the two solid rocket boosters from the Northrop Grumman await travel by train from Utah and are just awaiting the call from NASA before shipment. Combined, the core stage and solid rocket boosters made the SLS for Artemis I the most powerful rocket ever successfully to achieve orbit, generating 8.8 million pounds of thrust and sending the uncrewed Orion capsule on its multi-week mission to the moon. While the Orion crew capsule for Artemis II has been at KSC for some time, it awaits the transfer of some parts that flew on Artemis I, including avionic components for guidance, navigation, and control, radio communications antennas and transponders, as well as the video processing unit. Since it's flying with living, breathing passengers this time, there is still a lot of work that needs to be done to sign off on environmental control and life support systems before flight. Reuse on the Orion capsules will increase from mission to mission across the Artemis program in an effort by Orion contractor Lockheed Martin to reduce cost. The human factor also requires NASA to enhance the launch site for the next SLS rocket. NASA's Exploration Ground Systems team, based at KSC, that's Kennedy Space Center, already has the Mobile Launcher used on Artemis I back at the VAB, and work needs to be done on Launch Pad 39B to build out an emergency exit system and install a new liquid hydrogen tank. It won't be until Artemis III, scheduled for no earlier than 2025, that NASA will attempt to return humans, including the first woman, to the surface of the moon for the first time since the end of the Apollo program in 1972. NASA then wants to fly at least one Artemis mission a year. So lots to look forward to in outer space travel, huh? Well, for our next article, I'm going to read the caption for the photo that accompanies this. This may bring back a memory or two. The photo caption reads, Neil Armstrong, NASA, via AP, and then astronaut Buzz Aldrin on the surface of the moon near the leg of the Lunar Module Eagle during the Apollo 11 mission on July 20, 1969. With the space agency's new Artemis program, NASA is set to return to our nearest neighbor and looks to set up a permanent lunar outpost. So there you go. Washington Post writer Christian Davenport is going to explain the moon beckons once again, and this time NASA wants to stay. And his article appeared in the January 10, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. In 2010, during a speech at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, President Barack Obama, directed NASA away from its primary target, the moon, to focus its human exploration missions beyond the lunar surface to an asteroid and Mars. I just have to say pretty bluntly here, we've been there before, he said. There's a lot more of space to explore and a lot more to learn when we do. The United States has since reversed course, with the moon once again the centerpiece of NASA's exploration goals. Under its Artemis program, born during President Donald Trump's tenure and embraced by the Biden administration, NASA has real momentum and bipartisan political support for one of the most ambitious human spaceflight efforts in decades. It began with the launch of its massive SLS moon rocket and Orion spacecraft on November 16th, a mission without any people on board. The Artemis 1 mission will be followed by subsequent flights with astronauts first orbiting the moon, then eventually landing on the surface. But despite the progress, the concern raised by Obama still hovers over the space program. We've been there, done that. Why return to the moon? The answer, said Thomas Zurbuchen, the recently retired head of NASA's Science Mission Directorate, begins with the presence of water. It's important to recognize that we're going back to the moon that's really different than the moon we left when we took off during Apollo, Zurbuchen said in an interview. It was a moon that was dry. Our understanding of the moon is massively different. As a result, NASA has been establishing an enduring presence on the moon central to its future space ambitions. It will allow the program to practice how to live in space sustainably. It will allow scientists to tap into the moon's considerable scientific value to learn more about how Earth was formed, and perhaps it would also serve as a stepping stone to Mars and other deep space destinations in years into the future. Water is not only key to sustaining human life, but its component parts, hydrogen and oxygen, can be used as a rocket propellant, making the moon a gas station in space. Now, that could be critical for long-duration missions, allowing spacecraft to refuel on the moon instead of lugging all the fuel from Earth. And since the moon's gravity is 1/6 of Earth's, it is a relatively easy springboard to other points of the solar system. The moon has a story to tell also, both about the formation of the solar system and how Earth came to be. Without an atmosphere, it's a time capsule. The Apollo astronauts' footsteps remain intact, undisturbed by weather or wind, as do the scars of billions of years' worth of bombardment of asteroids and comets that were part of the early formation of the solar system. It's less about finding life itself, but it is certainly about the journey to life, Zurbuchen said. The moon can tell us a lot about our own solar system, the violent processes that created our planets and scarred their surfaces. Part of our history is right there, hanging out over the heads, and it is imminently possible to travel there. Getting to the moon is extremely difficult. Living there is even more so, and it's not something NASA has a lot of experience with. The last of the Apollo crews, Apollo 17, spent the most time on the moon, just over 3 days, and that was in 1972. The evolution from the short-term probes to long-term lunar homesteading, from exploration to expansion, will require a serious commitment of resources and new technologies, which is why NASA is looking to build a nuclear reactor on the moon. It's one of several initiatives NASA has begun under its Artemis program, designed to help astronauts stay for extended periods when they'll need power, transportation, and the ability to use the moon's resources. They would need habitats, rovers, and mining equipment, along with tools to extract the water and mold the lunar regolith, known as moon dirt, into bricks for habitats. The effort is still very much in its nascent stages, and the funding NASA would need for the long term has not materialized in full. A sustainable presence, despite the rosy predictions coming from the top echelons of the agency, is still years away, and the technical challenges are immense. But NASA has begun developing the technologies that would be needed to sustain astronauts on the surface for extended periods. In June of last year, the agency and the Energy Department awarded contracts worth $5 million each to three companies to develop nuclear power systems that could be ready to launch by the end of the decade for a test on the moon. The systems would generate 40 kilowatts of power, enough energy to power six or seven American households, and last about 10 years. They've started putting real money into that technology development process. Casey Dreyer, chief advocate of the Planetary Society, a nonprofit that advocates for space exploration, said, "I think that's a really critical piece of technology that has a broader application just beyond the moon, obviously on Mars, and," as he adds, "perhaps other places as well." NASA is also looking to build solar farms using arrays that point vertically and catch the angle of the sun over the horizon, and it's exploring how best to exploit what are called in situ resources, meaning those that already exist, such as the regolith or moon dirt. When people explored the Earth, they had the opportunity to build a house using local resources, Pam Melroy, the deputy NASA administrator and a former astronaut, said in an interview. "So we should be thinking about using our lunar regolith to build facilities, and NASA is funding several efforts in this area. With those efforts for now are modest," Melroy said. "They involve using a simulated regolith on Earth and seeing how it responds. How do we compress it? Is there something we need to do to make it a building block?" But some of those same resources can also create problems of their own, leaving NASA to figure out ways to deal with them. A lot of people don't realize how dangerous the regolith is, how damaging to spacesuits and human lungs, former NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine said in an interview. During some of the Apollo missions, he added, "The regolith got inside the capsule and was extremely dangerous because it's so fine and so sharp." There is also the matter of figuring out how to find water on the moon and how to best access it. NASA's plan is to use the Volatiles Investigating Polar Exploration rover, also called Viper. It would explore the moon's south pole in late 2024, NASA says, for a 100-day mission. Viper is going to help us with the in-situ resource utilization by mapping where the ice is, Melroy said. So when astronauts show up, they're going to have a map in their hand that shows where the ice is and where the best place to build a gas station might be. The moon presents many challenges, but as NASA seeks to create a permanent settlement on what some have called the eighth continent, it also represents a tremendous opportunity. Elijah's 3 days away, close enough to get home in case of an emergency, as the crew of Apollo 13 did, and is a natural place to practice how to sustainably live in deep space. The lunar poles have at least 600 billion kilograms of water ice, or enough to fill 240,000 Olympic-sized pools, this according to the Planetary Society, and an on-ground investigation could yield the discovery of vast amounts more. The time is now right to take a giant step, or a giant leap, I should say, by using the moon to learn how to live off the land, thus enabling sustained human presence on Earth while stimulating a new sector of our economy, Clive Neal, a professor of Earth Sciences at the University of Notre Dame, told the National Space Council in 2019. There are platinum group and rare earth metals in the group, as well as helium-3, which is a potential fuel for nuclear fission. Those resources, he said, could help stimulate our lunar economy that would help sustain a permanent presence. While the Apollo program was a monumental achievement, it also showed us how not to conduct human space exploration, because such a program based upon international competition is not sustainable, he said. For the Artemis program, NASA is relying on a robust commercial space industry led by SpaceX, which won this contract to develop the spacecraft that NASA would use to ferry its astronauts to and from the surface of the moon. Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin has also set its sights on the moon. And again, they inject that Bezos owns the Washington Post, from which we get the original article. Like SpaceX, Blue Origin is building a spacecraft capable of flying astronauts and cargo there for NASA. And in recent years, Blue Origin has hired a number of experts in how to extract lunar resources such as water. Earlier this year, it said it was buying Honeybee Robotics, a company that builds systems for extreme environments and has developed technology that is on the Mars, Perseverance, and Curiosity rovers. "Our innovative solutions make it possible for scientists to capture, contain, and analyze planetary regolith samples throughout the solar system," The company's website says, "We've designed, built, and tested hardware designed for all the planets between Mercury and Saturn, including the elusive asteroids and comets. First, NASA needs to get there. The successful Artemis 1 mission was a huge first step, a test flight that NASA said was flawless as the Orion spacecraft flew within 80 miles of the lunar surface, snapping dramatic photos along the way before it returned to Earth. The splashdown in the Pacific Ocean occurred 50 years to the day of the Apollo 17 mission, touching down on the lunar surface, and symbolized the space agency's renewed commitment to the moon. The significance of the Apollo program was transforming the impossible and making it possible," NASA Administrator Bill Nelson said. "Now we're going to do that again, but for a different purpose. This time we go back to the moon to learn, to live, to work, to invent, to create, in order to go out into the cosmos to further explore." So watch out for moon-based stories, I guess, in the future. And that is going to conclude our space travel episode with an article from Washington Post writer Ben Guarino. He's going to explain how to travel in space, the hottest new destination, as he puts it. Or the short version, go boldly but pack lightly. Sound familiar, huh? And this is from the January 9th edition of the Post. "The space just above our planet is booming. Off-world trips are rapidly increasing. 42 of the 51 commercial astronauts recognized by the Federal Aviation Administration left Earth within the past 2 years. The FAA predicts their ranks will balloon into the next decade, which may also bring new destinations, such as a rotating space hotel whose construction planners claim will begin in 2026. And some experts have expressed optimism that relatively affordable space travel could possibly be available by the middle of the century. For now, though, costs remain enormous. A $450,000 ticket reserves a spot on Virgin Galactic's space plane, which flies 50 miles above the Earth, six times a passenger plane's cruising altitude. Expect to pay even more to go higher. Blue Origin's 11-minute journey by rocket, which reportedly costs more than $1 million, shoots above the 62-miles-high Kármán line, the generally agreed-upon boundary between Earth and space. Others spend days in space. In September 2021, four civilian Americans orbited for 3 days aboard a SpaceX Dragon capsule. No word on how much it cost them. For $55 million, Axiom Space will send astronauts via a SpaceX rocket to the International Space Station, a laboratory that circles Earth once every 90 minutes. And for 2 weeks last April, the ISS's first Axiom crew members worked in the lab while foregoing proper showers. As humanity looks once again to the heavens, this series examines the recent boom of the private space industry, the long-term ambitions of NASA and foreign space agencies, and the potentially profound implications for this moment for society. "Space ought to be everybody's bucket list," said former NASA astronaut Michael Lopez Alegria, the Axiom Space vice president who commanded the April mission. "We'd be the first to admit that it's not quite democratic yet because it's pretty expensive. But we'll get there." The Houston-based company has already begun to build a segment of what will be a private space station. So there you go. What to look forward in space travel. And that, my friend, brings us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us again next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I remind you that the content of this program, which is being read for the North Carolina Reading Service, is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.